I am Barbara Lee. We are going to be talking together this morning about the spiritual ministry with disabled persons. And I guess Edna and I are wondering this morning if you would share with us why you are here. I need to have you raise your hands, please, because I don't hear.
I didn't get your question.
Why are you here?
Oh.
What brought you here? Did you have a specific personal reason for wanting to discuss spiritual ministry with disabled persons? In other words, do you know a disabled person? Do you have a disabled person in your family? Is that what brought you here? See?
Yes.
I'm a retired occupational therapist. Since 1930, I have worked with handicapped and ill people. And I just, in my retirement, I'm continuing, and I need to stoke the furnaces again. I need some help in carrying on.
Very good. Thank you for sharing. Yes.
I have an elderly aunt who I visit a lot, and because she has no one and is unable to walk, and wherever I go, I write her what I do, and she will be interested in what you have to say today. And you were so beautiful yesterday that I wanted to come again.
Thank you.
That's right.
Yes.
I'm a pastor, and in our church we have a number of people who are partially disabled and also almost totally disabled. So I work with people like that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. I take care of a 92-year-old woman for herself.
A 92-year-old woman
that can't take care of herself.
That can't take care of herself. Okay.
My father has a hearing aid and is at the point, he's 80, that when he goes to church, doesn't get one word. But he goes to church with mother and daddy, and that I didn't realize that he was not getting one word. But you mentioned, Barb, that you ask your pastor for the sermon notes sometimes. And I thought, that's what I'll have to ask daddy and mother's pastor to do for daddy, because I think if he could read, he would get more than he thinks. And that's a good idea. So.
Yes.
Well, I go to a church that probably 80% of the people are senior citizens. And many of them are hard of hearing, have very poor eyesight. And I am also a retired occupational therapist. So I sense what kind of problems they have. And I've organized the women into a group so they come together once a month for a potluck and work on lap robes that we give to the nursing homes. And that has been the salvation for many of these ladies, that they can still contribute and do something. And I find that they have a purpose in life, they are much happier.
Who else would like to contribute? Yes.
Probably a twofold reason. One is the church reason. We have those who are deaf, and we've especially had a gifted deaf person in our congregation for a number of years. He sort of heads up our district's deaf group as such and does all sorts of things. And again, when you're talking about, shall we say, communicating with him, we've done it two or three different ways because of his, hey, look, we've got, since we can't go ahead and sign, we did have signers. We went into rioting, and now we have a pastor who goes ahead and writes it out and so on like that. Secondly, the second reason is we have a camp that for the last 6-7 years has gone ahead and mainstream, shall we say, handicap of all ages, of all races, of all kinds, and it's really been most successful. But once in a while, we have a few problems along those lines.
I'm looking for more ideas in working or living next to some cerebral palsy folks.
one young woman, I think she's about 32, writes for a religious house. She writes very well. And I find that I will pose questions and later on I'll find a note on my desk that's typed from her. I would appreciate more help.
Anyone else? Would you? Yes, I was going to come to you. Would you please share?
Well, I would never be involved as deeply as I am with mentally disabled persons if I didn't have a granddaughter who is severely brain damaged. And because of her, I wrote Turn Over Any Stone. I actually wrote it for my daughter because she was way off in Hawaii with this baby that was showing more and more symptoms of being severely brain damaged, and to help her. And it has helped people all over the world in a way I never anticipated. And it brought me into the work, and that's why I was curious, because I thought, I have found out that people become involved with the disabled when they themselves have in their families or in their acquaintance someone who is disabled. And that's why I was curious to know if you were here because of that. And because of that, I also wrote Bright Valley of Love. I never would have written that. I never would have gotten into it if it hadn't been for my granddaughter. So it was curiosity on our part. And of course we know why Barbara's in it, because she herself has this severe handicap that she has mastered so nobly that she's a witness to all of us.
I see myself as having a disability. A disability that I cannot hear. I'm not so sure I'm very handicapped. This is a distinguishing characteristic. To me, the handicap is the result of the disability. I am handicapped because I cannot use a telephone alone. And when I hear people say, I'm so glad to be here because I am away from a telephone, I think to myself, if you only knew what it was like never to be able to use a telephone on your own, you'd never say that again. I'm handicapped in that way. I'm handicapped in that as a clergy person, I have absolutely no confidentiality on the telephone. There is always a third person on the telephone with me. And so I'm handicapped in those ways. My disability, the results of my disability of deafness affect my life in different ways. I also spend a lot of time working with seniors at home. And many of them have had life changes brought about by physical and mental changes in their own bodies. And this is another reason for my interest because of them and working with them on a daily basis.
Well,
were you going to say something about that wonderful place?
Bethel. How many have heard of Bethel in Germany?
In Germany.
By Bielefeld.
Mm-hmm.
I visited that in order to write this book. The director was a personal friend, Alex Funke, and his wife, Mariana. And so I was there for 2 weeks. Prior to that, he had sent me boxes of materials from Germany, in German. But the finger of God seemed to be in it, because after I came back from 2 weeks in Germany, and he had given me a book in German that was the documentary of the relationship between Bethel and Hitler and the Nazis. Everything there, but it was in German. Then I came back to Copenhagen and joined my husband, and we went out to eat with some friends, and there was a new friend. I'd never met her before. She said, I have a gift for you, Edna. She had a sister at Bethel, a patient. And so she was very interested in what I was going to do. And I unwrapped it, and it was the same book translated into Danish, which I can read, see? So I just thought, the finger of God is in this. God wants me to write this book. And anyway, it is, Carol Hinderly said, it's the one place on earth that Mary and I have been where God's will is done on earth as it is in heaven. There is such love. It's an entirely new concept of helping disabled persons, all kinds of disabled persons. They couldn't say no to any need, and so they built hospitals and residences for anyone who had any kind of... Someone came to Father Bodelschwing back about 1900 and said that he should build a place for alcoholics. And Father Bodelschwing said, well, you know, he said, originally we were meant only for the epileptics, and they called it the falling sickness, the falling sickness. And he said, that's what we started out to do. And the alcoholic said, well, Pastor, he said, you know, we have the falling sickness too. And so they have a place for alcoholics. But it's a total, total approach of love. So that they treat them physically, and they treat them spiritually, and they treat them, they honor their minds, even though there isn't much mind sometimes. Everything is honored and respected and built up in the Lord. I have never felt so ashamed as at a Bible study for retarded women. And they quoted scripture, and they sang hymns without hymn books, and they were so deeply and wonderfully spiritual, and I felt ashamed.
I think you brought up another point too, Edna, that in spiritual ministry with disabled people, it is indeed with and not to. Mm-hmm. And that what is most important is assisting people to help themselves rather than in doing for them necessarily. Some of you may have heard me share with you that people often come up to me knowing that I am deaf and look at the person I am with and say, can you ask her please this or that? Well, I'm perfectly capable of answering for myself, thank you. And so are 99 point whatever percent of other disabled people. They may not answer in the way you and I do, but they answer and can get the message across. And I think within the church, one of our ministries, as you say so eloquently, is to respect people where they are, at their level, and not only to share with them and to assist them in doing whatever they wish to do, but to let them minister to us as well. There are the five women from the group home across the street from our congregation that come in every Sunday morning. They're there before the worship starts. I don't know what happens to them in the next few minutes, but it's always during the first couple minutes of the sermon that they come down the center aisle and sit in the second pew. Always. And people are accepting of that. People love them. They also edge their way out very, very quickly in order to get to the coffee pot before anybody else after the service is completed. And people just accept them, and they talk to them, and they let them share about their activities. And that is ministry with rather than ministry to. Giving them the hugs, And they likewise give us hugs or big, beautiful smiles. It's sharing together rather than those of us who are more able looking down upon.
A good friend of mine, Marion Finholt, had started at St. John's on a small scale just for St. John's mentally handicapped persons, and there were about three of them, I guess, a Sunday school class. Well, then after a while, she did it on a Tuesday night. And there is a residence, Laura Baker School, where my grandchild now is. Marriage to the Hawaiian young man ended in divorce. And Judy came back and went to finish St. Olaf and lived at home. And a very severely handicapped granddaughter is now at Laura Baker, close to us. But anyway, Laura Baker has about 70 residents. And they asked if they could join in on this Tuesday night class. And suddenly, there were between 45 and 50 coming every Tuesday night. So I helped Marion. We got a good staff. And it's half an hour of worship. Sure, they go to church on Sunday to the churches that welcome them. And it's the Methodists that have welcomed them the most. So most of these people are Methodists because the Methodists send a bus, pick them up. There isn't one who comes to our St. John's Lutheran Church. But sure, they do go to churches, some of them, but they do like to have their own worship. Forgive me for turning away. They do like to have their own worship and be together with their own kind. They really do love that very much. And speaking of spiritual ministry, too, it's the spiritual ministry with. And when I come home on Tuesday night, Howard will sometimes say, you know, you are the highest on Tuesday night that you are all week. And I say, you would be too if you came and helped us.
There was a young man in my home congregation when I was growing up that was considered retarded or slow, and he's still at home and is now, I suppose, in his mid-50s, a little older than I am. And the pastor that came to my parents' church about 10 years ago took an interest in him, and he is a changed person, and he has status in the church and takes a real active part, and he's a totally different person, and it's so much fun to see what can be done for somebody that the rest of us, we just sort of, I'm afraid, felt he was not capable of doing things, and he has pride in himself, and so it was really exciting to see what Pastor Johnson did with this. And I know that Pastor Johnson also, my parents said, has a big ministry to alcoholics. And one reason is because his brother is an alcoholic. So I think, like you mentioned, and myself, when you have someone in your family or an acquaintance that has this, you are more apt to take hold. And so it's really an important responsibility for us that do know people.
Edna and I were talking last evening that, and I mentioned to her that I am on a national caucus, national LCA caucus for persons with disability, and also on a synod task force on working with persons with disability. And we had a large seminar that was planned for use within different areas of the state. And so we sent out letters. We had high-powered folks all set to come. We sent out these letters, and we found out that nobody in congregations had any disabled persons among them. Can you believe it? All these congregations, the whole southwest part of Minnesota, had no one who was disabled. Can you believe it?
No.
Yes.
Huh?
Well, I know, yeah. They are, because they were not brought out. We haven't welcomed them.
That's exactly the point.
Do you hear what's going on outside?
No.
Do you feel the earth shaking under you?
Do you feel it?
Not right now.
Well.
Is it bothersome?
It is. It's a very loud noise.
We have to read your lips.
Tell me to speak up then, really, if you need. Yes, Ben.
Yes.
In the last 2 years, I have been throughout the country doing interviews with families with disabled folks. Basically, the handicapped people do not want to come into the church because they do not feel welcome. And I could tell you stories upon stories about families that are very upset with churches because they want their teenagers to go to church, but they don't want nothing to do with it because they feel so isolated once they get into the congregation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like
our. One of them. Bill.
Yeah. I have a good question. What he was bringing up, this young gentleman. I work with disabled people at CP. There was one fella that I knew from Camp Courage, and he was on crutches, and he was bringing out what it says in Apostle Paul, that we're all invited to worship, you know. Well, when I think of the
You should take keep your hand away from your mouth, please.
When I know of the disability, we're all disability in our different ways. I mean, you take a person like, well, she's wearing glasses. Okay, you know, and I know that there's an injury, right? You get what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Well, like I said, Apostle Paul invites everybody to church. Now, I'm sure you've seen the movie Joni Erickson, I think it is. And, yeah, she has a movie and she wrote out a book. It can happen to anybody in life. I mean, like, we got a football player, Carl Kaselski, in that. Well, we're all in the same area of our disability in that. And I know I have been a member for Festivus for a long time, and I enjoy it. And I find, and I look, what's going on? What should be done to improve things?
Well, let's talk about that.
And
sir?
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's fine. You hit on the subject that we really, really want to talk about.
Yeah.
What can be done? And I think that's why you're all here. You want to know what in your congregation, you can do more. Maybe you're doing something, but you want to do more, and maybe someone here can tell you that more that can be done. Like group homes, are there any group homes? And can you start a Bible study? Or merely in the coffee hour, draw them in, something like that.
Excuse me.
Yeah?
I think you can, because when I was talking to her yesterday, she was talking about volunteer, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. I was talking to her, your name is Donna?
Barbara.
Barbara. Okay, I was talking to Barbara that I went up to Camp Courage up at Cedar Lake, that's in Minnesota, up by Annandale. And, well, anyway, I was talking to her. There was a blind girl. This was during supper hour, I think it was. Well, anyway, I was sitting on one side of the table. She was sitting on that side of the table. There was a volunteer person sitting right next to her. And she was helping this blind girl little by little, but she can do what she can, you know. Well, anyway, this blind girl was saying, will you please do me a favor if you have time? Will you read the Bible to me? And because nobody where I live, volunteer or staff, what you call them, they don't have time. They're always busy. And, and so she says, this volunteer person said, well, sure, I'll be glad to read the Bible. And she was so happy and gay that, you know, you feel inside that you're not, you're helping yourself, yes, but you're doing something for the Lord. And that what really counts in life today.
Bill, thank you for sharing that. That's a good contribution.
Yes.
And I think, yes.
I just want to say in our church, we had one woman.
Can you all hear?
No.
Can you stand up or speak up?
We had this woman, Marilyn, who
that's okay.
Three illegitimate children. And each time, she was not capable of taking care of them. So the state had to take care of them. Well, then she started coming to our church. She was not in our church. So then it was a one-to-one relationship with her. Her father was still living. She was trying, but she was not capable of doing. And we used to go in and clean her house and paint and do all these things. Well, finally, it wasn't a matter of volunteers going in and doing these things. It had to be a personal relationship with her.
Personal relationships are very, very important.
And with this, then, the minister finally, after this third child, it was a little bit, when she went to the hospital, had her sign that she would have her tubes tied and will not bring any more illegitimate children into the world. So she's still coming. We have to pick her up to bring her to church. And I don't know how much she gets out of the service. That's not for me to say. But at least she's there, and we see to it as a few women that she has the proper clothes to wear.
Is she retarded?
What?
Is she retarded?
Yes, she's very retarded, and she doesn't see. She's had two brain tumors removed. And it's very difficult to talk with. Mm-hmm. She doesn't seem to. But nevertheless, she's one of God's children. And we make it a point to see that she does get to change.
Thank you for sharing that. If we're going to be a little specific about ways that we can be of assistance, for instance, those folks who are blind within our midst, oftentimes, at least in our congregation, we have the general service Braille, so that the folks who are blind have a Braille idea of what we are going to do. The lessons are Braille for the day. And we have a woman in our choir who uses Braille music. And she sings with the choir most of the time. She also serves as lector. There are congregations that need to be made accessible with ramps, with elevators. These are expensive things, but there are less expensive things that can be done. As a deafened person, in our congregation, there is a sign language interpreter every Sunday, and I sit in the front row and watch that. But on the days when, for some reason, no one shows up, there's usually someone who sits next to me and takes some notes and shoves them under my nose as we go along here and there. Or those kinds of assistance mechanisms. There is someone here who, as the hymns are being sung, will point for me. And that's not a small thing, that's a huge thing. Extremely important to heavy.
That's even helpful for hearing refugee people. If you take refugee family into your church, help them find the liturgy and run your finger along the liturgy and the hymns, because they have not grown up with hymns like you and I have. So that.
That's a very
not only help. For deaf, but for non-English speaking.
I wanted to tell you about a dentist in our congregation who grew up in the congregation and became blind a few years ago, totally blind, wears dark glasses. Dentist and his daughter and mom bring the mother and the father to church every Sunday. But she told me that even though he grew up in the congregation, had lots of friends, these friends have sort of cut him off because of his blindness. And he goes to we have about 100 retired ministers in the Holy Jerusalem of Northfield, Minnesota. And they have meetings. And his wife takes him there, breakfast meeting once a week. And he'll come home and he'll say, was so-and-so there? Yes. Was so-and-so there? Yes, he was there. And he goes, and then he says, you know, and they're old friends. He said, no one came up to me and said anything. And so now Howard and I make a point of going up to him, taking his hand, saying, I'm Howard Hung. How are you, Dr. so-and-so? And oh, how he appreciates that. Otherwise, he just walks out. Darkness. I'm sorry, I didn't look at you.
In Baikal, Vancouver, Washington.
Can you speak up? I think some people are having trouble hearing you.
Because of that was the machine, yeah. Barbara.
Okay.
We can't hear Edna either.
In Vancouver, Washington, we have the State School for the Blind and the State School for the Deaf. The church that I belonged to at that time was Trinity Lutheran Church. They sent a bus to the blind school and brought these people back, and there would be many, many blind people. So we did see them and learn to know them. I no longer belong to Trinity. I belong to Messiah, which is out in another district of Vancouver. But Trinity still support the blind school, giving them a lift to church. And those people were very, very appreciative.
Well, can they comprehend? We're speaking of mentally retarded. Can they comprehend things of the spirit?
I don't think we can judge that enough. Because they can't communicate, because I know this with Marilyn. And yet she seems very, very pious in church. She doesn't whisper to anyone else. She brings her little envelope of offering, because this is Sunday morning.
comes to church. And I say to myself,
and that's because we can't hear back here.
And I say to myself, they can't comprehend, but I still say it's the individual attention that they crave. Now, if somebody especially comes up to greet her, she'll just move.
Would it be worth moving into the other room?
Is that all right with you? Would you all like to move into the other room?
Yeah.
Could you hear more easily?
Can you change that?
We're going into the other room, Betty. Is that okay?
That was a devil's advocate question when I said, can they really, mentally retarded persons really comprehend things of the spirit? I know better. I was sort of trying to...
You were just testing us.
I was testing you, yes. And I have found in my work with them that they comprehend things of the spirit better than so-called normal people. They lap it up, they love it, and they respond, and they learn, and they... it's wonderful. I get fed more in the spirit by them than I can possibly feed them.
Yes?
We have a class in our church for the mentally retarded from LBI Alternate. And I have noticed, you know, through the years, unless people really respond to these people and take them in and love them, they can be hurt more by just a little bit, you know. Because I think of one girl in particular that some of the people worked with for a while, and she went out, and it's really hurt me to see how really, you know, just out in the world and bitter she is.
Thank you for sharing. I think one of the things that we talked about earlier was the fact that our congregations say they have no disabled members, many of our congregations. And I think if you and I look around, we look to the person next to us in the pew, or we look at the person across the way from us, we will find that there are disabled people among us. They are invisible because we simply do not see them. And those members of our congregation who are not among us and who maybe did not come to church this morning or whatever, have not come for, many of them, for a reason. Many of our hearing impaired members stay home because there is no sense for them to come and sit even in the front row if they do not understand sign language, if they can't follow the service. I am an example of that as a seminarian. I have been to seminary worship 3 times in 4 years because there, for me, it is worthless to go. It's not worthless, but I don't get out of it what other people get out of it, and consequently have not gone. And that's what people in our churches are saying. Our hearing impaired members who have been active in committees and on church council and all these things, all of a sudden are at home and they're isolated. And they say, I don't go to the Mr. and Mrs. Club and I don't go to senior fellowship because I can't understand what's going on. We do have disabled people within our congregations if we only look for them and see them. Benny.
The biggest population within the American Lutheran Church that I know right now is people that is hard of hearing.
It's the single most chronic disability.
But very few congregations take that into consideration.
That's right. Few take that into consideration.
Yes. I'm from Colorado Springs. We have 5 Martin Luther homes that we support, and that those homes accommodate 8, starting with the small children who are multi-handicapped. And they are integrated into the public school system, and they are taken to all
all of the activities that go on in the city, anything that children are interested in, they are taken to those things by, most of them are in special wheelchairs and all, but they are taken to those things, and they really enjoy getting out, and the people that work with them are dedicated young people. And then the older ones are trained in everyday living, how to do their laundry, how to shop for groceries, and all that. And it is, our program there in Colorado Springs is considered quite a model. It is just really something to see how those people develop under the proper tutelage.
Thank you for sharing that.
How many have group homes within 10 miles of your church? Ah, all of you. One thing you can do, at Bethel I learned that they love celebrations. Birthday, oh, there's so many parties all the time, birthday parties. And they celebrate every church holiday. Great big celebrations. And I think if some of you would find out the birthdays of people in the group homes and come in with a birthday party, they would love it.
We have monthly birthday parties in our church, and they come over and they play bingo, and everyone goes home with a prize. It might be nylons, it might be a scarf around your neck, a pillow for your bed, jewelry that people have gotten rid of, whatever, but they can pick their prize, and so everyone goes home with a prize.
I'm absolutely horrified. You play bingo in your church.
Oh, Barbara.
For shame.
I guess we were talking about disabled, huh? Yes, I'm sorry.
We're speaking about the hearing impaired, and I'm one of them, but in our church, there's something that I'm sure other churches do and can do, and that is to put in a PA system and a handset so they can hold it up to their ear, whereas otherwise they would not hear the service at all. And I know, since I wear a hearing aid and people know I have a hearing problem, they come and talk to me about their problems. Many of them do not hear what's going on in the service. It's just a wasteland for them. So it's important that people do speak well, and if you have a PA system that is working well, or otherwise, they're missing out a whole lot.
Yeah, thank you. How many of you met Signe Busted last week when she was here? Some of you did. She is a deafened woman, and in many of our sessions, she used an FM receiver. The speaker had a microphone on that was connected directly to her FM receiver, and those are used in many of our congregations. There are several congregations in the Twin Cities who use those and have the receiver sets out in the narthex for people to pick up on the way in. Yes?
I have a friend who has always been deaf since she was a young girl. But anyway, I don't know if people are aware of when they talk, how many people hold their hands in front of their mouth. And how
I'm aware of it.
Yes, I mean, and she taught me that. When you talk, hold your hands, if nothing else, so you do not put them in front of your mouth, because no way can you lip read or interpret otherwise.
Back to your bingo. I think it's wonderful that you do something like that, too, to play with them, you know, something that they can enter into and get a little gift. It's
always
wonderful.
Everyone goes home with a gift. Mm-hmm. I wondered how they were going to play bingo, and one yells bingo, and the next one yells bingo, and they keep on filling the cards till sometimes all the squares are filled. But everybody gets one gift, and they can pick out what they want from the whole table full of things. And then there are three or four cakes. Everyone has three or four pieces apiece. And they go home happy and full.
In line with what you said about putting your hands before your face, if you talk more slowly and face the person also, it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. You notice that they put up black blinders on the windows in the other room for me. That's so that I can see your faces and try and speech read you.
Anyone lip reads more than they think they do.
I want to ask you if we can use the Bible with the mentally retarded persons. Can you have a Bible study with mentally retarded persons?
Sure.
You can and you should and you ought to. I've done that and they really do understand. And there are curriculums that are coming out now. There's one in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the Friendship Series, and it's all worked out. I think
the LCA has one. Mm-hmm. The National Office has one.
Uh-huh. And you should look into that. And if you don't have anything special in your congregation, for a mother of a retarded girl told me that her daughter went to a normal class of so-called normal, but she didn't feel at home. But she loved being with her that she knows are her kind and having their own special curriculum and their own special class and their own special teacher. I think you should do that.
I think I would like to, if we could spend just a few moments on ways that we feel we and our congregations could, number one, be more alert and aware of disabled people in our midst, number one, and two, ways in which not only that we can serve them, because heaven knows they serve us far more most of the time than we serve them, but ways that we can educate ourselves to be more in tune with their needs. Yes. Go ahead.
It's an angle in regard to the handicap that I haven't heard yet, but it hurt me immensely when they would see a handicap coming down the hall and they say, well, here comes the pest. Oh, here comes so-and-so. And these people in their life had responsible positions. For example, a psychologist who was a psychologist for the New York City Police Department supported the policemen when the public said they're pigs. You turn around and say, you know, that's a good compliment. What do you mean compliment? Pigs are the only ones that can kill a snake. There are a lot of snakes out there. Or the judge, or anyone that was always around, but no one would have much to do with it. Used to call my wife the patience of a saint. It takes a lot of patience with the handicap, and a lot of people just want to ignore them because they're pests. And that angle is a very difficult one, because I felt for the one that they talked about. And I saw to it that at least there'd be one of us that could be there to cooperate. And I was called on many a time.
Who of us is not disabled? Who of us is not disabled in some way or another?
I'm disabled in the field of medicine. I'm a handicap.
We all are disabled in some way or another. Every single one of us. Whether maybe we can't walk as fast as we used to, maybe we don't see as well or hear as well, maybe we can't climb up into the mountains as I would like, and that has nothing to do with my hearing. But we are all disabled in one way or another, by lack of understanding, by lack of concern, by lack of interest. We all
fear.
By fear. You're right.
But what I want to know is how to help more those who are visibly disabled. I want to know how we in our churches can help them more than we are.
Number one. I don't mean to answer your question, but I want to bring something up.
Okay.
Number one, how many of us have church libraries? And how many of those church libraries have anything in them about disability? One, two, three. The point is, we need to educate ourselves about disabilities in order to do something.
There's some wonderful children's books to educate children, so-called normal children, about visibly disabled children.
And adults.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We can learn from children's books a whole lot. Benny.
I would like to say something about laborers, how we labor people. In the last couple of years, I have really studied laborers. I don't like words. Yeah, I've been called a handicapped. Yeah, I've been called disabled. I've been called mentally handicapped. I don't like laborers. I think people, especially when they talk about mentally handicapped, they would say, you know, the mentally handicapped boy named Bill is the mentally handicapped girl, Lucy. Why do we need to always identify, why do we always need to identify? Are they any more different than they are, than we are? I don't think they are. God created everybody to be his or her children. And I think God wants us to treat people the way that we are, you know, we should be treated. And I hate labor.
Labels are for jars, not
labels.
God called us by name, it says in Scripture.
Right.
So we should learn to know their names and call them by name.
Right.
How many of your congregations have had informational programs? Educating people within the congregation on what they can do, educating people on different kinds of disabilities, how to deal with them. How many of you have done that in an adult form? Three, four, five of you. Okay? That's an idea that you can utilize, because there are a number of people who are certainly qualified and capable of doing those kinds of things.
Barbara, what's the name of your material? What is the name of your material that LCA puts out? And you said it was high-powered in four churches?
Our task force, the Minnesota Synod LCA Task Force on Disability, has a day-long seminar that we are willing to present that really is high-powered, on different kinds of disabilities, on resources available, on people who can go out to share information with congregations, on...
Where do you write? Where do you write to get it?
Write to the LCA, Minnesota Synod Task Force on Disability.
The ALC has one, too. We had a task force a couple years ago on disabilities.
That's correct. There's EFFA services within the ALC, EPH, PHA, THA, EFFA services. But the LCA has that. It's at 122 West Franklin in Minneapolis, in the Minnesota Church Center. There are a number of us. I know Benny has gone out to do some talking, and I certainly do loads of it in various congregations, and there are many other people who do as well. So there's that kind of material that is available. There is the befriending, one-on-one befriending, that people forget about oftentimes in congregations, but that is very important and very necessary. the comment essentially that you made, Benny, to treat disabled persons as adults, capable of running their own lives, capable of leading their own lives.
Not all.
No, but many of them who are able to do yeah. that are not treated that way.
And there's one thing that I have a gripe about, that there's this great movement to empty the institutions, and there always will be some who cannot cope, including my grandchild.
You're right.
She
right.
needs the support.
Mm.
She could never be mainstream. Never.
I was at a wonderful funeral, a couple weeks ago, in the Black Baptist congregation, not far from our place. And after the funeral service, we went downstairs for food. And there was a young man, about 25, I think he said he was, paralyzed from the neck down, sitting there. And people were eating, and he was just sitting there, and he was at the next table. And all of a sudden, there was a woman who was sitting next to me from our congregation who didn't know him, who walked over and sat down beside him and said, "How about something to eat?" And he said, "Uh-huh." And she started feeding him.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times do we think to do that? How many times do we think to reach out with such a simple thing as feeding him? I saw somebody walk past him a few minutes later and take out a hanky out of his own pocket and stick it to his nose because the man had to blow his nose. They're small things, but they are important things. Yes.
Something else we did in our church, which I think is important to do, we have a disabled man who was kicked in the head by a horse. He gets around in a wheelchair, and fortunately, with 2 or 3 years ago, he has an overgrown golf cart in which he became independent so he can travel. But we made him a deacon in the church, and he assists in receiving the offering, which the deacons do once a month, comes to the deacon's meetings, and made him a part of the church in that way, which really was just opening up a whole new world for him.
You bet. So many things people can do.
In the line of some of them not being able to cope, we have a neighbor who has a boy who has a number of disabilities, and he was at home for about 30 years, but he was a severe diabetic along with other things, and they discovered that he would just sit up in his room and wouldn't exercise as he should with his disability, and so they found a group home for him, and he is very happy and gets very good care.
Mm-hmm.
And his own home was very supportive. They have another daughter who's a severe diabetic, and I said to the mother one time, "I don't know if I could be like you, so patient and care." She said, "I figure that it's just a responsibility I have, and it's a privilege to take care of these children."
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't because they didn't want him at home, they just felt it was best for him.
Mm-hmm. I have to eat my words. I said there were no disabled persons in our congregation, but the daughter of our retired orchestra conductor is a Down syndrome. She was born at the same time as one of my daughters. And the congregation is wonderful to her. And on Saturday, she folds all the programs. And if there's any mailing to be done, she stuffs envelopes. And she just loves to do it. Does a good job and is praised for it.
And so it needs to be done.
And
it's
needs
not
to be done, yes, yeah.
I think that's an excellent example of that you didn't think of her as handicapped anymore.
No.
Because she's so much a part of your group. I think that's real success.
And there's a preacher in Minneapolis who has some in his congregation, one in particular, and he unlocks the door of the church, goes in and makes the coffee, and has everything ready for the minister when he comes, you know. But this preacher also takes whole big groups of them to the zoo. He does wonderful things in his ministry with. But it all depends on, no, it doesn't all depend on the preacher, but there are preachers who pay no attention. There are preachers like this man who really put their arms around them.
What is ministry with disabled persons? What is it?
Caring.
I see a lot of mouths moving and I don't understand why.
Caring and sharing.
Loving.
Can you raise your hands, please?
You have to be sharing with them.
Caring.
Making them a part of everything, feeling important.
Making them a part of things, making them feel important.
Just the things that I need.
Amen.
Good.
Amen.
Give them what you need.
So true.
Being aware.
Accepting.
Indeed. Hugging, loving.
But loving them with Christ's love, which is not condescending, which doesn't say, oh, I am such a good person, see what I'm doing.
I'm so sorry you are.
Really loving them.
As they are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you work with sick people or disabled people, if you think, you'd be torn apart if you thought, oh, isn't it too bad they are the way they are? You have to think, what can I do to alleviate their suffering? How can I make them more comfortable? Or what can I do for them?
What would I want someone to do for me?